Why do I conduct my show on this matter, Mundo?
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
All six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Hello and welcome to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the Bush administration and its anti-worker policies. This is show number 25. It's Saturday evening, around 11:43 p.m. Before we begin in earnest, let me remind you that the site for the blog is cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's C-U-P-O-J-O-E. .blogspot.com, and please feel free to leave a comment in the open thread I create for every new show. You can also email me at joevec@bellsouth.net and leave comments or suggestions there. I always try to answer every email. I don't really get that many, to be perfectly honest. I have a few, Ed Miller, Steve, and a few others send me regular stuff. Billy Shears from the White Rose Society, by the way, and of course, I want to plug the White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org, and they host my archives. Ben Bircher, we interviewed last show. He's a wonderful guy. It's a wonderful site with a lot of different progressive radios. And of course, I'm always looking for suggestions about what to talk about when you email me. If there's news items of interest to working people. And, of course, I'm always looking for new music to play because otherwise you're just going to hear a lot of crap from my archives, which means mostly stuff from the 80s and the 70s and the 60s, all that stuff from old bastards like me. So, anyway, on the blog over the last week, I posed a simple question. Again, that's cupofjoe.blogspot.com. And I asked this very simply. If you had screwed up as badly on your job as George W. Bush has screwed up on his, would you still be working? And this brought a few good comments, but it also brought out my old nemesis, Beachon, who proclaimed that as long as Bush keeps killing terrorists, he gets my vote. Well, you know, I tolerate Beachon's presence on the comments section of the blog for a couple of reasons. Because I'll say this, I have kicked and banned a couple of people from the blog, you know, a couple of trolls. And a troll to me is someone who just shows up and starts trouble. And Beachon is an old friend. That's one reason. And he, in person, he really is a nice guy, but on the boards, he manages to come up with some pretty vile statements like that last one. Also, I'm not really sure he believes what he's saying. If it doesn't, it means he's just trying to get people's goats, so there's no point in arguing him in that way. Neil Bortz, by the way, our local radio hate monger, loves to do this, say something just to piss people off so he can get a good laugh out of it. You know, one of these days, he's going to really piss someone off, and they're going to firebomb his house, and I hope he gets a good laugh out of that. But anyway, if Bruce really does, Bruce is his name, Beachon, if he really does believe what he's saying, then he's just plain nuts, and there's no point in arguing with him in that respect. Because, frankly, some of the things he says are just mind-boggling. So long as he's killing the terrorists, what about all the civilians who just happen to get in the way? You know, we talk about the American soldiers dead, and of course I always hate to see one of our soldiers die. But what about all the millions of Iraqi citizens that had nothing to do with Saddam Hussein and who just want the Americans out of there because we're not really doing anything to foster democracy and freedom there? We're just there for whatever reason. I'm not going to get into that. But the main reason I don't argue with Beachon is because, frankly, it's not worth my time. And his method of argument is to pile so much shit on you that you wind up spending more time shoveling that off of you than getting down to what the brass tacks of the argument was in the first place. And then a personal note to Vince, who's the guy currently arguing with him on the, in the comments section there, just a friendly piece of advice, man. He loves to get into these huge ballots. Beachon does. And you guys can be fighting for months with no conclusion to it. And Beachon obviously has more free time on his hands than he really needs. But anyway, Beachon's cocky attitude is just another reminder of the kind of stupidity that got us involved in the whole Iraq mess to begin with. I mean, military might help defeat Nazi Germany, American military might help defeat Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan, but it was American culture, especially the idea that life can be fun, that made America the greatest nation the world has ever seen. Winning the war against these nations was a small thing compared to the fact that we won the peace. And hell, rock and disco did just as much to tear down the Berlin Wall as our tanks and missiles did during the Cold War. But we were wrong in Vietnam, and we're wrong in Iraq, and the reason we're wrong is because that some people believe that overwhelming military might can overcome anything. It can't, and there are too many historical examples to prove it. And let me tell you my favorite one here. Let me put it back to you in time. 2,500 years ago, ancient Greece, a few days after the Greeks' miraculous victory over the invading Persians, who really greatly outnumbered the Greeks. And the Greeks at the time were militarily led by the city-state of Sparta, which was a military city-state. I mean, their entire city was like a military camp, and that's how they ran it. They were the greatest warriors of their time, and still a symbol of great warriors to this day. And the other leaders of the Greeks were the Athenians, who were the founders of democracy. And in fact, democracy is a Greek word, meaning essentially self-rule, people rule. And it is from them that we get so much culture, art, science, our ideas about self-rule in life. I mean, it boggles the mind that this group of people came out practically out of nowhere to decide we're going to do this. And they won a really miraculous victory against the Persians. I mean, it was incredible. I mean, at the battle, there were three main battles that you can point at. Actually, four if you count Marathon, which was the first time. And the Marathon is where we get the Marathon race, but that's a story for another show. They defeated the Persians at Marathon. And then the Spartans, led by their king Leonidas, in the second wars that came about, because King Darius was the first guy. King Xerxes, who was Darius' son, had to avenge what happened to Darius, of course. And so he went in with an even bigger army. And he was met by Leonidas and his Spartans at the pass at Thermopylae, which was a small pass. And they held him off. And they would have continued to hold him off if a traitorous Greek had not led the Persians down another way, and they managed to surround the Spartans. But they held off the Persians long enough for the Athenians to win at Salamis on the sea, and then later on at Galatae after the winter was over, and drove the Persians from Greece. Those wars, if the Greeks had come up short on those wars, we would have nothing like what we have right now. The world would be a completely different place, because everything that they would have had would have been destroyed. Their art, their culture, their science, everything, because the Persians would have just enslaved them, and that would have been it. But they won, and because they won, that stuff remains with us today. But, you know, the problem, you know, when the war was over, when the battle for the Persians was over, Athens formed the Delian League, which is basically a loose group of nations who agreed to, like, the same economy, kind of like, you know, NAFTA or, you know, Japan's Greater East Asian Prosperity Spirit, whatever. And the leaders were the Athenians, but at first, you know, everybody else was a fairly equal partner, and they really worked hard to, you know, bring everybody in and bring everybody together, and everybody made a lot of money. But the Athenians got greedy. As their wealth and power grew, they started getting pushy, and they started pissing off their friends. Does this sound familiar? And eventually the city-states that they pissed off went to Sparta for help. And since the Spartans were worried about Athens' growing might, they began what we now know as the Peloponnesian Wars. Now, I'm not going to go into too much detail about these wars. If you really want a complete picture of what went down back then, I recommend you go to your library, look up Thucydides. That's Thucydides. His history on the Peloponnesian War is one of the most perfect pieces of journalism you will ever see. It's kind of dry reading, but it'll give you, in a lot of detail, a lot of the stuff that went down then. But anyway, there was a point during the war, between the two main rivals were Athens and Sparta. Okay, Athens are the free people, and the Spartans are the military. And there were a lot of nations that were kind of in between, and one of them was a little island called Melos. Now, Melos was a tributary to Sparta. They were not a willing tributary. Sparta had conquered them, and they were paying tribute, which is what a tributary means. And the Athenians had freed them, but they wanted to use Melos as an island base, and they also wanted some soldiers, and they basically, you know, wanted to run the place. And the Melians, even though they were no friends of the Spartans, didn't really want to submit to the Athenians. They wanted to be basically neutral, to be left alone. And they said, you know, why can't we just, you know, be neutral? And the Athenians wouldn't have any of it. They asked to negotiate, and the Athenians agreed to negotiate, but they really only wanted to persuade the Melians to give in without too much of a fight. You know, why waste time doing this? Because, you know, the Athenians were just going to take over the island regardless. I mean, that was it. You know, there was really no point in negotiating along those lines because the Athenians were going to do what they felt like. And this is a small part of the negotiations that went on. I got this from Edith Hamilton, who wrote the great book, The Greek Way, and she really just quotes Thucydides on this. And the Athenians said, "There's no point bothering you with the same old story about how we have a right to our empire because of our military, or tell you that we're attacking you because of something you did to us, some wrong you did to us. We won't bore you with a long speech which you wouldn't believe anyway. So since we both know exactly what's going on, we hope you'll just make it easy for both of us, accept it for what it is, and make the best of it. You know as well as we do that this is how the world is. Rights only come into play between equals in power. The strong do whatever they want, and everyone else does whatever they can." And the Melians responded, "Regardless, it's important, and we're speaking because we must, since you're telling us to forget about our own rights when it comes to what's best for your interests. It's important for us to remind you that the rights you're denying to us protect you also. You in particular ought to know this, because your fall would not only destroy you, but set a horrible example for anyone else who struggles to be free." Of course, the Athenians responded, "It's a law of nature that men rule wherever they can. It's not like we're the first to do this. Men were doing this before us. Men will do this long after we're gone. But since we've got the power, we're using it while we can. You and everyone else would do the same thing if you were us." So, of course, the negotiations broke down, and Athens easily took over the little island. But in the long run, the Melians were right. If the Athenians had stuck to their democratic ideals and their principles and left the Melians alone, and of course had decided against trying to expand their empire by attacking Sicily, the history of the world might have been very different. But they got greedy and arrogant and stupid, and eventually they were defeated by the Spartans and were never the same again. And the Greeks were conquered by Philip of Macedon and his son Alexander, and then later, of course, by the Romans, and then by the Ottoman Empire, and so on and so forth. And, of course, this then is our attitude now. And what we're seeing now is not too different from what went on back then. What we're seeing in Iraq now, or in Iraq just before the war, is not too different between what happened between Athens and Melos. Hussein knew his time was up, and I'm not losing any sleep over what happened to him. He was scum, and I'm glad he's under arrest. But it was clear that the U.S. wasn't going to accept any kind of peaceful arrangement they wanted in, and no one was going to tell them otherwise. Now, Ted Rall, the political cartoonist, had a great cartoon, which I posted on the blog, which summed it all up very nicely. "We invade another country. We bomb the hell out of them. We kill and maim and push them around. People who live there start shooting at us. And we call them terrorists?" Anyway, let's have some music, and we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe radio show.
This week on TBTM Radio.
Where is he when all this hell is breaking out in Iraq? He's home clearing brush.
Well, I like what somebody says, you know, whenever there's trouble, George takes a powder. He's gone, folks.
That's what he did after that August 6th presidential briefing.
I don't see how I could possibly have imagined a plane crashing into something and destroying it. I never watched a John Wayne movie or had a drink called what? A kamikaze. They named a freaking drink after it, idiot.
TBTM Radio, on the web at takebackthemedia.com.
Mexican Americans love education, so they go go to night school and they take Spanish and get a B. Yeah, leave that in. Mexican Americans love their nanas and their nonos and their ninas and their ninos. Nanu, nanu, nina, nono. Mexican Americans don't like to go to the movies where the dude has to wear contact lenses to make his blue eyes brown, cause don't it make my brown eyes blue. And that's all I got. How do you like it?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. It's like a protest tune, man.
Yeah, I dig that, man.
Yeah.
But you know, while you were singing that, I wrote another tune. You know?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's like the same thing, only different. You know? Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a little more rock and roll than
that. All right,
that,
we'll get down.
It's something like this here. Beaners. I got to work a little more in the lyrics.
Yeah, that's heavy,
it's
man.
It's kind of like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I got to
work
on it,
man. Beaners gonna...
Hello, Mexican-Americans like to answer telephones and say hello to whoever's on the other end.
This is www.bartcop.com.
Here's a question about the famous PDB from August 6th, 5 weeks before 9/11.
You pointed out that it did not warn of a hijacking of airplanes to crash into buildings, but
right.
that it warned of hijacking to... obviously take hostages and to secure the release of extremists being held by the U.S. Did that trigger some specific actions on your part in the administration, since it dealt with potentially hundreds of lives and a blackmail attempt on the United States government?
Yeah.
Now, just for the record, the question asked was...
Did that trigger some specific actions on your part?
So let's see how the stumbling bumble monkey... answers.
Ed, I asked for the briefing, and the reason I did is because...
Excuse me, Mr. Monkey, but he didn't ask who ordered the briefing. He asked what actions you took.
There was also an indication, as you mentioned, that that bin Laden might want to hijack an airplane, but as you said, not to fly into a building, but perhaps to... release a person in jail. In other words, you serve it as a blackmail.
I wish somebody would call him on this so he would stop saying it. He keeps saying, if I had known they were going to hijack an airplane to crash into a building, I would have done something about it. But since they were only going to hijack a plane and probably blow it up because I can't get Israel to release a bunch of prisoners, then we didn't bother. I just stayed on vacation in Crawford and talked to the damn cows. If I had known he was going to crash into the buildings, yes, then I would have done something. But they didn't tell us that. They didn't give us a time and a date and a flight number and the names of the hijackers ahead of time. All they told us was there was going to be a hijacking, so we just stayed on vacation. We figured we'd deal with the hijacking. Why doesn't somebody make them stop saying that?
And, of course, that concerns me. All those reports concern me.
But, Monkey, the question was not, were you concerned? The question was, what action did you take? And since you took no action, you changed the question into a different question that you can answer. The answer to the question is no, we took no specific action, but you can't tell the truth because you've got something to hide. You've got something to cover up. So instead of answering the question, you answer the question, were you concerned, Mr. President? Well, of course I was, because I'm a concerned guy. And for the record, he never got anywhere near close to answering the damn question.
I think I've lost my way.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show.
And welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. The blog is cupofjoe.blogspot.com. The email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the Bush administration and its anti-worker policies. This is segment two of show number 25. Now, I took, well, actually, before I get, let me drop in here in the Bart Cop chat room. And again, it's bartcop.com. You heard him. You just heard a little excerpt from show number 35 of his, I highly recommend you go on there and subscribe if you can afford it to his radio show. He's a good guy, even though he's an Okie. He's from Oklahoma, and he rants and raves about Texans all the time and about a lot of other things. Bart's a nice guy. I like him a lot. He's real good. I like his fire and his passion. And, of course, we had the ad for the TakeBackTheMedia.com. And we had some music. We had Cheech and Chong with Mexican Americans. Don't like to go to high school so they take Spanish and get a B and get a C. We had Paul McCartney with Hell on Wheels from the Band on the Run album in the 70s. His a very good album of his. Just again more music from the old bastard. Let me say. Anyway, with Bart Cop, I'm here in the Bart Cop chat room, and if you want to get on the Bart Cop chat room, I'm occasionally there. My nickname is Jove, J-O-E-V-E. I am one of what they call the ops. I'm a big man on campus over there, although Bart Cop never mentions me on his website, but that's okay. You know, Bart is Bart. He does what he does. I do what I do. But let me say hi to my pals here. We have Cerberus. We have Dipstick. We have Old Fudd. There's Mudrow. There's Nuvi, Rude Boye, As All Lit. You know something? I think this guy's a troll. I'm going to have to find out about that. There's Babs, and there's Braesk, B-R-A-E-S-K-E, Call of the Wild, Ender W, Feed, F-E-D-E, M-A-W-M-P, I assume that's pronounced Maw M-P. One of my favorite guys, Moose and Squirrel. I actually met Moose when I was running my convention in 2001 He came to my first show there. Nice guy. And One Box and Poodlehead rounds off. Let's see. And what are they say? All saying hi back. And right now they're talking about a doctor who glued somebody's son. Okay, I think it was something that I just came in. So I came in the middle of something here. It was something about Call of the Wild, whose son didn't want stitches. And the emergency room doctor actually glued his cut back together, whatever cut that is. And what else is going on? And Momp asked me about, MP asked me to say nice things about you all, and I said only if I'm bribed. How is everybody doing out there? It is, well, technically now it is Sunday. It's 12:27 a.m. I just finished the last segments. You know, sometimes I kind of spread these out. My only attempted goal, and it's more of a guideline than a rule, is to try to get a show out on Thursday, try to get one out on Sunday. And the Thursday show, usually I start doing it actually like Monday evening and then work my way towards it. I went back to work on Monday, and I guess we had an okay days Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesday. But Thursday I came in, and it was bad because my coworker Dave didn't show up that day. I don't know why. I'm hoping it was nothing serious, more serious, and he just wanted to take some time off because the job can get a little stressful sometimes, and he needs some time off, but he's worried about, you know, taking too much time off. But he wasn't there, and the other guy who works there generally, he was a little late too, so I got a little stuck at the beginning and actually had to stop the line, which nobody likes. And, of course, the supervisor came up to me, and I'm like, hey, there's two parts coming online. I'm just by myself here, you know. I'm not a miracle worker. You know what I'm saying? I'm not a miracle worker. And he just walked up. And I was just angry that whole day. And the other guy came in, and he's only working with us, maybe temporarily, maybe permanent, I don't know. He usually works on the other line, just more than one paint line. And he stacks things differently than we stack things. And it's a defect of mine, and I know it's my fault, but I just can't help it. I'm used to doing things a certain way. And if they're not done a certain way, I get annoyed. And he was stacking some boxes in a different way. And I was already pissed off because, you know, we were short one guy. And, you know, the people on the other end, they don't care. They're hanging like there's no tomorrow. Actually, they had, like, the day shift people. That was their stuff because it takes about an hour and 15 minutes. So when we first start, the stuff that we're getting is stuff that had been hung by the day shift people. And he's stacking it the wrong way. And I'm trying to get him to stack them the right way. But he's, nah, I don't want to hear any shit. Just stack it right. But finally, I just said, the hell with you, and I just started, you want to stack it here? Anyway, and I started tossing the boxes. Here you go. Here. Stack it any old damn way you want. And I lost my temper, and I shouldn't have lost my temper, but I was pissed off the whole damn day. In fact, I was so pissed off, I didn't go on my first break. When I'm angry like that, I like to use up my energy. And, you know, I use it up at work, and I'm just like, leave me the hell alone. I'm pissed off. Let me be pissed off. And because Dave didn't show up, I wound up having to leave work early. I left to work at 10 o'clock because I had to catch the bus. See, if I don't have Dave gives me a ride home. So if I have to catch, if he's not there, I have to catch a bus or get a ride from somebody else, and was too late to find a ride from somebody else. So I had to leave early. I let the supervisor know. I said, look, I can't, you know, I gotta get out of here so I can catch a bus, because if I stay till midnight, I can't get home. At the best, if I'm lucky, I'll get home at like 2:30 a.m. It takes that long, especially since that the last bus that leaves the train station closer than I have leaves at like 12:53, and I wouldn't get there until like after 1 o'clock. So it's just a big, big pain in the ass. At any rate, and then I took Friday off. I really shouldn't have, but the wife was feeling a little ill, and I was just still tired and annoyed, and then I decided to hell with it. I just wanted to stay home all day Friday, which is what I did. I got some things done around the house. Actually, I got some things done today. You know, the studio here, it's not really much of what you'd call a studio. It's just basically a desk with my computer. I've got a very small mixer that I bought off of eBay, and I've got a microphone that I got from Radio Shack that's got like a little bubble on it, those little styrofoam bubbles. And I had a microphone stand that I had been using, and it just sat up there, but it was just like a black, flat, kind of heavy base for the microphone, for the gooseneck. It's like a gooseneck thing there. If you don't know what it is, forget about it. I'm not going to explain it. But I found, I went to Radio Shack today to look for an adapter, and I discovered that they had a mount for the microphone. So I went and got me that so that I can, so the microphone will, the stand that I had is just not heavy enough. So I'm working on rearranging the place so that it's a little bit more efficient. I like cleanliness and I like efficiency. Unfortunately, liking cleanliness is bad when you're a slob. And I am a slob when it comes to certain things. So, anyway. I wanted to give a plug to some of the other left-wing radio sites. I was meandering around the web and I found a few. And actually, I emailed and got mentioned on GRR Radio. GRRRADIO. That's GRRRADIO.com. And I got mentioned, and that's on Grace and Rama on their show on GRR Radio. That's Sundays 9/11. It's www.grrradio.com. GRR Radio, GRRradio.com. They're on Sundays from 9 to 11. That's Eastern Standard Time. And also on rantradio.com, rantradio.com. There's the Sean Kennedy show. I was listening to that. Sean is really, really cool. He's really fast. And because, you know, we're all on the Internet, we all curse like sailors. We all fucking curse like sailors, man. You know why? Because we can fucking do it. That's why. If I want to sit here and then just fucking curse all night, I can curse all night. Because this is the Internet, damn it. And I can say whatever that damn thing I want, I can say. Short of, you know, something flat out illegal. But I can fucking curse if I want to curse. And that's what I like about the freedom. Now, should I get picked up by somebody, perhaps Air America Radio, which would be nice. And they had some troubles last week, too. I don't want to get into that too much. They got taken off some of their airs because of a dispute with one of their producers. I'm not really sure what the whole deal was, but they got shut down. But hopefully I'd like to get on their schedule someday. And all of these shows are basically auditions for the Air America and whoever else wants to pick me up. The only thing I have is I will not work for a Clear Channel station. I refuse to work for a Clear Channel station. I don't fucking care if I spend the rest of my life in poverty. I will not go on a Clear Channel station. And you can take that to the fucking bank. Excuse me, I'm going to get a drink here. I drink sparkling water, which is just basically seltzer water. In the evenings, I drink that because otherwise the caffeine keeps me awake all night. And I've been having trouble sleeping. And I was having another reason why I was on, you know, was didn't go in on Friday after that day on Thursday was because I was having trouble sleeping because I was so pissed off. And I don't know why I was pissed off. I just don't know why I was pissed off. I just was. I don't know if you've ever had a day like that. You don't have any reason for it. You're just angry. Maybe things aren't going so well or something like that, but you're just angry. Anyway, where was I? I saw, so anyway, let's listen to Grace and Rama, Sundays 9 to 11, on GRRradio.com, GRRradio.com, and listen to Sean Kennedy especially. He's very good on RantRadio.com. He's a young guy, so he goes off on them. I saw this article from the AP, and I talk about our soldiers out there in Iraq because they're all working people just like me. You know, and most of them are reservists. There's a lot of reservists, and they're really overburdening the reservists out there. Now, I remember when the first Gulf War came, and I want to iterate this. I want to make sure I'm very clear about this. There were some people who some reservists who refused to go into combat during the first Gulf War, refused to go. And I was very upset with that. Even though I didn't necessarily agree with the war itself, it was certainly a legal war in the sense that it had the entire UN and a lot of people behind it. So, you know, all the legal technicalities were taken care of, unlike the current situation. But these reservists were like refusing to go. And I thought that was very, very bad, and they should have been punished for that, because, you know, that's just plain wrong. If you know, that's one of the things you expect. On the other hand, what we have going on now is that they keep extending the tour of duties of these reservists, who are just working people like you and me, like I say, and they keep telling them, well, they can go home now. Oh, you can't go home. And apparently this is from Middletown, Ohio. About 70 soldiers in the Middletown-based 324th Military Police Company won't be coming home from Iraq in May as scheduled. Instead, their tour has been extended at least 3 months. You see, this is what I'm talking about. While I don't like the idea of reservists, you know, getting angry about, you know, going to war, because, you know, that's the price you pay sometimes for being a reservist and for joining the military. That's, you know, there's an old saying, when you wear the green tuxedo, you dance where they tell you. But the thing about it is, on the other hand, the military has to be honest about how they're treating these people and how they're dealing with these people, because they're not regular army. They're only supposed to be used for a certain time and then called back. And they're being overextended as it is right now, and that's why morale is very low. And a lot of them are being forced, I forget what the term for it is, but they're basically being forced to stay in the military longer than their arrangements. Now, the Ohio National Guard unit that I mentioned has been gone since February 2003 and has been in Kuwait and Iraq since last May. The 324th is the only Ohio unit affected by the Pentagon's decision to keep 21,000 soldiers in Iraq who were to return home next month, Ohio National Guard spokesman Jane Sims said. He said, once a State Guard unit is on federal deployment, it is entirely up to the commanders on the ground or the Pentagon to decide how long they stay there. In an email to the Cincinnati Inquirer from Kuwait, Sergeant Joe Rukti said the extension was very frustrating for his unit. Sergeant Rukti said, our families and employers are sacrificing as much as the soldier, if not more. And who is Mr. Rukti is a Cincinnati police officer. And if he's with a military police unit, obviously he's a military policeman. My wife has been asked to sacrifice entirely too much and shouldn't be asked to give any more. Rukti's wife, Rachel, said that the soldiers of the 324th have done their part. It's time for someone else to take a turn, she said. Soldiers' family members are particularly upset that they were told about the extension in recorded phone messages Saturday night. And if anybody out there listening, if you're from Ohio and you got one of these messages, or you know somebody got one of these messages on a tape, record it. Get it. I'll play it on the air so we can hear how they're treating our soldiers. And Rachel called her husband in Kuwait on Sunday morning to discuss the situation, only find out that he hadn't been told he wasn't coming home. This extension was the second for this unit, and the 324th will be asked to provide security for private contractors running convoys from Kuwait into Iraq. The 324th originally was to have been sent home in November, but that deployment was extended another 6 months. And I want to make it clear here, who are the ones that are suffering for Mr. Bush's war? And make no doubt about it, this is Mr. Bush's war. We had a choice on this. We didn't have to go to war, but we went. And I feel badly for the reservists in Ohio and in Georgia and in other places who are getting stuck out there because of bad policies, because of incompetent leadership, and because of wars that are built on ideology and not practical reasons. And I'll say this, I've said this before, and I will say it again. If you had done it right, I would have been perfectly behind going after Iraq, but there's ways of doing this thing. And these people do not fucking understand that. But when the only weapon you know is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. When the only weapon you have is a hammer, the only solution looks like nail. That was wrong. That was very wrong. When all you know how to use is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And that's basically it. Anyway, let's have some more music, and we'll be back with the final segment of the Cup of Joe radio show.
Welcome to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. John Ashcroft, a man who wears his piety like a cheap raincoat, deeply appreciates that George W. Bush appointed him Attorney General. It's ironic, ain't it? Bush made a biblical story come to life. After all, Ashcroft rose from political death after losing his 2000 Senate re-election bid to a real dead man, the late Mel Carnahan. Our Johnny boy must surely relish his political parallel to Lazarus. So it's no surprise that Ashcroft consistently repays Bush by deep-sixing any investigations of Bush administration wrongdoing, with the exception of the Plame affair which Bush dumped on him. No, Ashcroft has no time to look into the daily improprieties of the Bush administration. What with all the work he's doing covering up the breasts of justice, prosecuting bong distributors, trampling on states' rights, and helping the NRA obstruct investigations of gun crimes. He's a busy man. That's why it came as no surprise that when it was Ashcroft's turn to testify before the Milquetoast 9/11 Commission, the Attorney General did right by Bush. Ashcroft blamed Clinton. The Chicago Tribune captured the moment well in its headline, quote, Ashcroft ignored terrorism, panel told. Attorney General denies charges, blames Clinton. You see, Ashcroft wasn't just trying to protect Bush's butt. Johnny Boy had some explaining of his own to do. As the Tribune noted, former interim FBI Chief Thomas Pickard testified Tuesday that Attorney General John Ashcroft didn't want to hear about terrorism when Pickard tried to brief him during the summer of 2001, as intelligence reports about terrorist threats were reaching an historic level. And then, of course, there was a little bit of grim irony. As the Tribune noted, Ashcroft turned down an appeal from Pickard for more anti-terrorism funding, an appeal that Ashcroft formally rejected, get this, on September 10th, 2001. And there's even more. According to the Tribune, quote, Commission investigators said Dale Watson, the former head of counterterrorism at the FBI, told them that he almost fell out of his chair when he saw a May 10th, 2001 memo from Ashcroft on Justice Department budget priorities because it made no mention of counterterrorism, unquote. No mention of counterterrorism. But old Lazarus Ashcroft claimed he was on top of things. If there were any problems, he said, it was because of Bill Clinton. The reality is that Ashcroft was under instructions to set up a masterful Karl Rovian diversion. Our Johnny Boy claimed that the Clinton Justice Department had set up a so-called firewall that prevented the intelligence community from sharing information. Of course, Jamie Gorelick, one of the relatively more outspoken members of the 9/11 Commission, just happened to be in the Justice Department at the time. So you know what's coming. After Ashcroft's testimony, Rove had the Republican echo chamber start the clamor for Gorelick to step down from the 9/11 Commission because the GOP hypocrisy machine claimed she was part of a group responsible for the intelligence failures that led to 9/11. My, oh my, these Bushevics are not just Machiavellian. They're downright evil. John Ashcroft may think he's carrying out the work of God, but how does he know it's not Satan, disguised as God, who's whispering into his ear? It sure looks that way to us. You know, Ashcroft pursued a war on pornography and bongs instead of a war on terrorism. And he blames the Clinton administration for 9/11. For this, and much, much more, Lazarus John, we honor you as our 27th GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com, so many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon. Everybody was kung fu. It was a little
6th of June in a Kenworth pulling logs. Cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy hauling hogs. We is heading for Bear on I-10 about a mile out of Shaky Town. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck and I'm about to put the hammer down.
Them hogs. Good, 10-4, about 5 miles or so. 10, roger, them hogs is getting intense up here.
By the time we got into Tulsa Town, we had 85 trucks in all. But they's a roadblock up on the Cloverleaf, and them bears is wall to wall. Yeah, them smokies as thick as bugs on a bumper. They even had a bear in the air. I says, calling all trucks, this here's the duck. We about to go a hunting bear.
Negatory, Big Ben. You're still too close. Yeah, them hogs are starting to close up my sinuses. Mercy sakes, you better back off another 10.
Well, we rolled up Interstate 44 like a rocket sled on rails. We tore up all of our swindle sheets and left them sitting on the scales. By the time we hit that shy town, them bears was getting smart. They'd brought up some reinforcements from the Illinois National Guard. There's armored cars and tanks and jeeps and rigs of every size. Yeah, them chicken coops was full of bears and choppers filled the skies. Well, we shot the line, we went for broke with 1,000 screaming trucks and 11 long-haired friends of Jesus in a chartreuse microbus.
Yeah, rubber duck to Sodbuster. Come on there, yeah. 10-4, Sodbuster. Listen, you want to put that microbus in behind that suicide jockey? Yeah, he's hauling dynamite and he needs all the help he can get.
Well, we laid a strip for the Jersey Shore and prepared to cross the line. I could see the bridge was lined with bears, but it didn't have a doggone dime. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck. We just ain't going to pay no toll. So we crashed the gate doing 98. I says, let them truckers roll 10-4.
Come on, join our convoy. Ain't coming on, getting our way. You're a good trucking convoy.
what it is. They'll knock it out there for sure. Well, mercy sakes, good buddy. We're going to back on out here, so keep the bugs off your glass and the bears off your tails. We'll catch you on the flip-flop. This here's a rubber duck on the side. We gone. Bye-bye.
C.W. McCall. Convoy. Before that, we had Carl Douglas with Kung Fu Fighting. Those were suggested by Ma MP from the Bart Cop chat room, and she was just as shocked that I actually had those songs in my playlist. But what can I say? I'm a child of that era. That was the 70s that those songs came from. And unless and until somebody sends me some songs that are more recent, something from the 2000s, that I know, or at least that that they know, that they want me to play, I'm going to continue to play this old crap, because that's really all I have. I'm just an old bastard, and that's the songs I know, and that's what I looked for and got. There was also BuzzFlash.com's GOP Hypocrite of the Week for this week. They released those on Saturday, so every show that you're going to have on Thursday from now on is going to have that, since I try to do two shows a week. BuzzFlash.com is your source for news on the left-wing side. How is everybody doing? This is the Cup of Joe radio show. The blog is cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's C-U-P-J-O. Excuse me. Say that right. C-U-P-O-J-O-E dot blogspot.com. And the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. Send me your song suggestions, and maybe you won't have to listen to any of this crap anymore. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the Bush administration and its anti-worker policies. It is now 1 a.m. on Sunday morning, and I was looking at the New York Times magazine, which is being devoted to health care issues. Now, I just got my health care card in the mail. I went with Cigna for several. Actually, there were three reasons I went for Cigna. The first reason was that I could get the doctor that I wanted, and who was the doctor just down the street from where we live. The second is I could get the hospital that I wanted, which was the DeKalb Medical Center, DeKalb County here in Georgia. The DeKalb Medical Center was who treated my wife when she had her problem. She had a colonoscopy done there, and that's very painful. And she also had a liver biopsy, which also was very painful. And she spent about a week in the hospital. And even though she was on Medicaid, they treated her like a queen. And we actually got a private room. How we managed that, I don't know. I guess they would just fill up everywhere else. But we got a private room, and I wasn't working then, or would have been much more difficult. But, I got to stay there with her, and that was very nice to be able to do that because she was in a great deal of pain. And DeKalb Hospital Medical Center took care of us very, very well, and I wanted to be able to go to them. It's really not too bad. It's like a $10 prepay for a doctor's visit. And, of course, I get glasses and, vision and hearing and other stuff. And I've got some medical things that I need to get taken care of that I haven't, well, simply because I haven't had health care. And I, of course, am one of many people in this country who don't have health care. Now, those of you who have been around for a little while, remember the days when Bill Clinton tried to get a universal health care system going in this country. It's not the first time we've tried this, but the pharmaceutical industries and the medical industries of all sorts have been fighting that for years and years and years. And you know what? Even though they won the victory against President Clinton, sooner or later they're going to use, because things have gotten worse. The highlight of the New York Times Magazine's articles on health care is Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, who asked the very simple question, "Now can we talk about health care?" And she starts off, "I know what you're thinking. Hillary Clinton and health care have been there, didn't do that." No, it's not 1994, it's 2004. And believe it or not, we have more problems today than we had back then. Issues like soaring health costs and millions of uninsured have yet to fix themselves. And now we are confronting a new set of challenges associated with the arrival of the information age, the technological revolution, and modern life. Think for a moment about recent advances in genetic testing. Knowing you are prone to cancer or heart disease or Lou Gehrig's disease may give you a fighting chance, but just try with that information in hand to get health insurance in a system without strong protections against discrimination for pre-existing or genetic conditions. Now, I could read the entire article, but I'm not going to, because that would be long and boring, but, well, maybe not necessarily boring. I find it fascinating, but, you know, Senator Clinton wrote that. If you haven't registered to get on the New York Times website, go ahead and do so. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. If you want to use a different email address. You know, what I do is very often I use a secondary email address, like one of the free ones. I have a Yahoo account, and I even had a Juno account, which I haven't used for a long time. But basically, that's for my spam stuff, and I keep my other account for my personal stuff. At any rate, go on there and read this article. It's in the New York Times Magazine section, and it's a very, very long article. So obviously, I couldn't read the whole thing if I wanted to. But healthcare is a major issue for workers right now. It's very important to me. And my wife is currently, and I'm not sure how this works because, you know, now that I have insurance, even though she can't get covered by it for reasons far too boring to explain here, you know, we're wondering about whether or not she'd be able to get disability, which is what she's trying to get. And she's been told that she probably would not qualify for federal disability. My wife has so many different health things. She's got a heart condition. She's got arthritis. She has you know, problems with her digestive system. I mean, she's got a lot of different problems, and quite frankly, she can't work anymore. And knowing the type of life that my wife has had, I don't want her to work anymore. And it's not a chauvinistic thing. I mean, if she was certainly capable of it, I wouldn't mind. It's certainly a two-income family would make things a lot easier. Even if it was only a part-time job, it would be enough to pay the rent and bills, basically, and then my salary would basically, you know, be everything above and beyond that, which would be nice. And of course, if I could cover her with health care, that would be good. But if she gets on disability, that means she gets some sort of stipend from the state or from the federal government, and that'll help out because she frankly can't work. This is not a situation where she's too lazy. Trust me, the least lazy person in the world is my wife. My wife is the hardest working person I've ever met, and she's worked hard all her life. She's had to raise three kids practically by herself because her first two husbands were frankly no good. Because she's had to work very hard, I basically am to the point where I'm like, you stay home and you just, you know, do whatever little housework that needs to be done. And we really don't need that much, a few dishes and stuff like that. And I help out from time to time, too. I can cook, and I do cook from time to time, and I do clean dishes. So, you know, again, it's more or all part of being the anti-guy. You know, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, I don't treat women like property. So I guess I'm not a real man as far as, you know, people like from the man show and stuff is concerned. But healthcare is of major import. I have issues that I need to take care of medically, and so do most of you out there. But our system is all set up, just screwed up. I heard several years ago on Michael Moore's fantastic television show, TV Nation, where he had what he called the Healthcare Olympics, and it was basically between Canada, the U.S., and Cuba, comparing the different systems. And in order to be fair, they each had the same treatment, different people, obviously, but the same treatment. It was a broken leg. And it was a comparison of, you know, how the conditions of the hospital, how long it took you to get seen, and how much it costs. Now, the Cuban one, the conditions were, you know, pretty bad. Not awful bad, but, you know, not as nice as you would expect to see, even in a crappier hospital in the United States. But it was all free. And you did have to wait some time in there. I don't think it was that bad. I don't remember how long it was. It was a long time since I've seen the show, but you know, you had to wait a certain amount of time. It wasn't that bad to wait, and you didn't pay anything. And in the Cuban healthcare system, they're totally covered and it's free. Granted, I'm not going to move to Cuba and be a communist because I hate communism just to get that healthcare like that. But you know, that's one thing they had in their favor in that sense, and it didn't cost anything because it was all covered. The Canadian ones, they got it. The facilities were much nicer than the Cubans, although not quite as good as the Americans. Well, we'll say that. And it didn't take too long for the guy to get seen, and he got a cast. And the only thing he paid was like $20 for crutches. So everything was covered except for the crutches. In the United States, you know, everything was real nice, and it waited about as long as it was in Canada, and it cost something like $2,000. And that's why Canada won the healthcare Olympics. And, you know, people talk about a single-payer system or whatever we're going to have. Look, the fact of the matter is we're not going to get a single-payer system anytime soon. There's too many people who are willing to fight against it because there's too many people making a fortune off of it, pharmaceutical companies, other suppliers of doctors. I remember once when I went to a doctor's visit, this was maybe a couple of years ago, and it's like I was just there for a regular checkup, and there were every every 5 minutes there was some new drug company representative coming in trying to, panhandle some drugs onto these doctors. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Is this normal? Does this happen every day? And it turned out it was just like a weird coincidence something was going down. But I thought it was disgusting that these people, have you ever met these salespeople, people like that? Are they even human? Have you listened to them talk the way they talk? Hi, how are you? Nice to see you. If you look at this, are you human? Are you a robot? Jesus fucking Christ. Smack, smack, smack. You want to wake them up. You want to see if they have any real human feelings and emotions down there instead of this kind of polished way of, speaking. Hi there. Oh, hi. I'm so fucking phony. And they were all over the place on that particular day. And I'm like, what the hell is the deal with that? So, I've got the health care now, and I've got to go get some things taken care of, and I'm wondering how long it's gonna take to get all this stuff taken care of, because frankly, I'm starting to have some serious problems now. I think I'm starting to get arthritis because I cannot close my fists anymore. I cannot close my hands. It really, really aches when I do that. In fact, I can almost feel the joints popping out a little bit. And I need to talk to the doctor about that. And I'm wondering if it's because of the type of work I'm doing now. And I'd hate to think that I'd lose my job because of this type of deal. But I don't know what choice I get. Because, I have to grab things every day in my line of work. Maybe they can move me somewhere else where it's not so stressful. I really just don't know. But healthcare is a big issue. In fact, the big strike out in California, the grocery worker strike, was about healthcare more than anything else. It's a huge issue here. And we're not going to get a single-payer system here. As I was saying before, as again, I lose my train of thought, and I'm sorry that I babble so much, but that's just how I am. And until I get a little bit more focused and a little bit more formulaic in the show, it's going to just happen that way. But we're not going to get universal health care like Canada in this country. We're not going to get a single-payer system at all. But what we ought to do is what Howard Dean wanted to do if he had managed to win in the primaries and if he had gotten into office. He said, look, let's just get everybody covered who's not currently covered by Medicare and Medicaid. If you're below a certain poverty level, then you get on Medicare and Medicaid. And, everybody else, they pay at a progressive rate. For insurance, and then you can make a decision about what kind of healthcare system we're going to have. Because this way, at least everybody's still insured. Oh, but anyway, I'm sorry. You see, again, I rambled off. I mentioned that I went to Cigna because Cigna, I can choose the hospital I wanted, which was DeKalb Medical, and because I could choose the doctor that I wanted. Those are two big reasons. The other one of the three that I was given. It was the cheapest. It was like $8 and something a paycheck, which is not really bad at all. You're talking about $25 a month for health care. And it's not bad. It's like a $10 hospital visit, doctor's visit, $50 for an emergency room visit unless you get accepted, in which case they waive the fee for that. So this is a big issue, and it's going to continue to be a big issue. Read Senator Clinton's article in New York Times Magazine. Read that. It's a very good article. I read through part of it already. It's an issue that's going to have to be dealt with. And the Bush people aren't going to deal with it. If and when they get another 4 years, and I'm still not satisfied that they're going to lose at the end of the year because there's too many friggin' idiots in this country. And I've talked to several people about that, and they just seem to agree. Yeah, there's just too many friggin' idiots who live in this country. Then the situation's going to get even worse. Because these people want to tear up Medicaid and Medicare. They've already given a big boost to the pharmaceutical companies, and you're not going to get anything out of that. The seniors are going to get screwed over. But the pharmaceutical companies are going to do pretty damn good. But, of course, that's what you expect from the Bush administration and their anti-worker policies. Anyway, let me bring this to a close. This is Joe Vecchio. Once again, let me remind you that the blog is cupofjoe.blogspot.com. That's cupofjoe.blogspot.com. And the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. This is Joe Vecchio from the Cup Radio Show, signing off. And we'll see you in a couple of days. Bye.